Welcome back to Culture Shift Live here on 101.9 WDET. I'm Amanda LeClaire. Great hour of the show coming up for you. We've got a brand new Sam's Jams headed your way. Sam's got some new music from incredible Detroit artist Ian Finkelstein coming up for you. And we'll get into the dance party as well. And also want to let you know, something very special is happening during Culture Shift today and for the next few days. We have pairs of weekend passes to Movement. That's right. You and a friend can go to all 3 days of the Movement Electronic Fest happening next weekend in Hart Plaza. Thousands and thousands of people come into the city from all over the world, and thousands of Detroiters head over to Movement as well each year. And it is a great lineup this year as well. So if you want to go to Movement with a friend, on behalf of WDET, well, make a gift right now at WDET.org. Everyone who makes a gift at whatever level is right for you. That means $5 is cool, $500 is cool, $50 is cool. You'll be automatically entered in to win this pair of weekend passes to Movement. Winners will be drawn each and every day, so make your gift right now. You have up until 2 o'clock, and you'll get a call from our own Tiffany Treadwell right after the show, letting you know if you won or not. WDET.org, the place to go. Let's get into this week's One Update with our own in-house gaming journalist, Nate Bender. Nate has been a longtime gaming journalist and the host of the daily gaming news podcast called Let's Play. Of course, the gaming industry, absolutely massive, multi-trillion dollar industry. And for many people, it is not just a hobby. It's a sense of community. It's a connection to millions of other people. And so we like to talk about what's going on in the world of gaming, streaming, and so much more each and every week. So it is time for the One Update. Nate, welcome back to Culture Shift.
Thanks, Amanda. I'm glad to be here. Got a lot to talk about this week because this week saw the release of maybe the best game of 2023. That's right, Zelda, The Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom came out on May 12th. So far, it has been selling like gangbusters. By the way, at a $70 price point, I saw a great meme this morning that was, you know, $70. This better be the greatest game ever made. And then, well, you got lucky this time. So
$70, that's not, I guess I thought that was kind of average. Like, games usually run in like 50, 60 at least?
Average is $59.99. Oh. So 70 is a little bit higher than the average. So Tears of the Kingdom is on pace to be the most successful game of 2023. It has blown Hogwarts Legacy out of the water. Tears of the Kingdom, by the way, is the fourth Zelda title to get perfect scores from both Famitsu and Edge magazine. Now, these are two highly regarded video game review magazines. It's pretty rare for a video game to get a perfect review score from both Famitsu and Edge. So Famitsu has issued exactly 28 perfect scores in their 37 years of publishing. Four reviewers issued it a 10 out of 10, scoring a perfect 40 out of 40. And Edge has issued only 24 perfect scores in 30 years, and one reviewer has issued it a 10 out of 10.
So I've heard a lot of folks on social talking about this game who aren't even hardcore gamers whatsoever. Yeah. So if am I right in thinking that Zelda, Legend of Zelda, is kind of like Final Fantasy, where like even if you're not a constant gamer, you see something new came out and you're like, that's my game.
Yes, absolutely. And not just that, it is also similar to Final Fantasy, where you don't really have to have played the previous entries to be able to get something out of playing Tears of the Kingdom. Obviously, it is a direct sequel to the previous Switch game, Breath of the Wild. So, you know, it probably helps to have a little bit of context and for what happened in that game. But Legend of Zelda, really kind of goes out of its way to make sure that each new entry is really welcoming for anyone who, you know, it might be their first entry into the Legend of Zelda series. But this is a series known for quality. Again, extremely rare to be getting a perfect score from both Famitsu and Edge. There are only 6 other games who have achieved this feat. 4 of them are Legend of Zelda games. So Ocarina of Time, Skyward Sword, Breath of the Wild, and Tears of the Kingdom all receiving perfect scores, as well as Bayonetta and Grand Theft Auto 5. So Nintendo has been really going out of their way to really protect the intellectual property around Zelda, because on May 1st, there was a leak where the entire game was leaked out onto the internet. Someone sold the game early and the data got out there, and so they have been really flexing their legal muscle in order to deal with that situation. So moving on, European regulators have approved Microsoft's $68.7 billion acquisition of Activision Blizzard. This was up in the air for a little bit, but most people assumed that the European Commission would end up approving the merger. They now have. This was as a result of Microsoft's 10-year commitments to competing cloud gaming services to address some of their major concerns. Still being the thorn in Microsoft and Activision Blizzard's side is the UK's Competition and Markets Authority. They have defended their decision to block the merger to members of Parliament. The CMA shot down criticism that blocking this merger would dilute trust in the UK government regarding deals like this, with the CMA chair Marcus Bockenrick suggesting that approving this merger outright would have been turning a blind eye to anti-competitive mergers. So still a microscope on this $68.7 billion deal. But an interesting note, CEO for Microsoft, Satya Nadella, went on, I believe it was Squawk Box a couple of days ago, and it very cryptically said that pulling Activision Blizzard games out of the UK market entirely is not off the table, which I thought was an interesting sort of threat to put out there. So, lastly, just wanted to follow up on the Pentagon leaks that happened over Discord. We talked about this several weeks ago, right when it happened. Of course, that was done by the Massachusetts Air National Guardsman Jack Teixeira. So folks have gone through his roughly 9,500 Discord posts and have found deeply disturbing things that we've already kind of touched on in the past. But I found this point really interesting, because we had talked about a number of leaks that had happened around the War Thunder video game, which is a military sim video game. And that is the point of origin for Teixeira as well. Teixeira started leaking documents to win internet points in realism debates about a war video game.
Oh,
so
wow.
I really think it behooves, whoever is involved at this point. I'm not sure if the FBI is still involved, but to really kind of put the War Thunder community under a microscope and understand why now 6 national military leaks have come out of the War Thunder community.
Whoa. So Just real quick, we're going to get to our, we're going to talk to our Washington Post reporter in a minute, but his own insecurity basically made him do this, or this is like, when you say internet points, he means anything actually?
Yeah, know. So it would be like if someone said, you know, the F-16 fighter, you know, can pull this many G's, and he goes, no, it can actually pull this many G's, and to win that argument, he leaks military documents. It's bizarre. I can't explain the behavior, but that is at least the point of origin for these military leaks. It wasn't, in fact, the Thug Shaker Central Discord, nor was it a Minecraft Discord. It all originated with the War Thunder community.
All right. We're talking to our in-house gaming journalist, Nate Bender, here on the One Update on Culture Shift. Let's get into our main topic.
Absolutely. And for this, I'd like to welcome in technology policy reporter for the Washington Post, Kat Zakshefsky. We are going to talk a little bit about AI and its application in video gaming. Kat, thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
So we saw the CEO of ChatGPT testifying this week, and some really interesting facts and notes coming out of that conversation. Can you kind of give us a, you know, broad strokes? What happened in this conversation between lawmakers and the CEO of ChatGPT?
Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI, which makes ChatGPT, appeared on Capitol Hill to publicly testify for the first time. And, you know, he's been on kind of this private charm offensive with lawmakers in Washington, having private meetings, dinners, huddles at the White House. But this was the first time that the public really had the opportunity to hear, you know, what his message is to DC. And it was quite sobering. You know, he gave a very clear-eyed look at the potential problems with ChatGPT, and at one point said, you know, his deepest fear is that AI could, quote, cause significant harm to the world. And he really positioned this testimony as seeking to collaborate with policymakers in Washington. He laid out these risks quite starkly, but at the same time struck a note of optimism, saying, you know, he thinks that this could be a printing press moment, a transformative moment for the tech industry if lawmakers and executives like himself are able to work together on regulation.
Well, and clearly AI is a very disruptive form of technology. I struggle to think of an industry that wouldn't be touched by, you know, the kind of advanced AI that we see coming out of OpenAI, you know, whether it be, you know, ChatGPT or whether it be other AI services, you know, some of the AI art services, even now AI voice generation. So there's a lot of consternation out there among, you know, kind of creative professionals that this is going to start taking jobs away from them or opportunities away from them. Is there much concern or even discussion on this point?
It's a really good point because I think it extends even beyond those creative professions. I mean, certainly someone like me who's a writer, I can see clearly how this could be disruptive to my profession, but we're also, you know, seeing how this could change education, functions in an office, coding and computer science. And so there was some discussion of that. Senator Blumenthal, who convened the hearing, said, you know, his biggest fear is what this could do to jobs. I think that concern about jobs and the economy is motivating a lot of this action in Congress. But ultimately, we didn't hear quite as much discussion about that in this hearing. Sam Altman, I would say, painted a rather rosy picture of what this could mean for jobs, that AI is going to create new jobs and, you know, take away some of the, you know, tasks that people might not enjoy doing in their current work. But really, I don't think there was a lot of questioning, really grappling with those broader economic effects. This week, we've actually seen that happen more in other countries, like Italy, which is now thinking about what ways could you pay people or financially support them if their jobs are suddenly overtaken by AI.
It's the one update here on Culture Shift on WDET. We're talking with technology policy reporter for The Washington Post, Kat Zakshefsky. You know, we've heard a lot of concerns from, you know, people who are operating in the AI space that, you know, this technology could, in theory, you know, spin out of control, or that there are concerns that just how disruptive AI could be, and yet there seems to be no slowing down of the development of these technologies. Is there a little bit of a consternation on the point of folks who are actually making this? I know you said that, you know, there was rosy pictures being painted, you know, earlier in the conversation. But, you know, the concerns around the long term effects or the long term dangers of AI always seem to be a part of this conversation. How concerned should we be about that aspect of AI?
So we certainly have seen some technologists come out and warn in recent weeks and months that this is moving too fast. And the deployments that OpenAI, the maker of ChatGPT, is making are putting broader pressure on other companies like Google and Facebook and others to move faster than they were planning to, and that this has resulted in some recklessness in the industry. We've even seen some prominent tech leaders like Elon Musk call for a moratorium on releases of some of this, powerful AI technology. And what we heard from Sam Altman this week is his argument is rather than being reckless, OpenAI is engaging in what he calls, quote, iterative deployment. And by putting, you know, these models out as they develop, that is giving institutions time to really understand what's possible here and weigh what some of the potential threats are. He thinks the current iteration of this technology is, quote, relatively weak and imperfect. By putting out what's working now, he thinks that gives society more time to uncover the associated risks. I think the question, though, is if you have every company doing that, and there's obviously extreme financial incentives here, there's so much money at stake in AI, are they really going to be responsible in every single deployment? And where could this go down the line is a major and very important question that I don't think anyone in Congress or in the tech industry has a clear-eyed answer on at this time.
Kat, Amanda here, and I know we have a very limited amount of time with you. You are very busy. You're working on something with the Supreme Court right now and a tech case. But, you know, as someone who has been covering the technology industry for so long, is it right to think that, you know, with the technology that we have, as you said, the iteration that has available to public is definitely not what is actually happening behind closed doors?
The technology has
advanced much farther than we actually really know about. Would that be in your experience? Would that be something to keep in mind for the public as well? And second question on that, are there any talks in Congress or with these tech companies that you've covered where people are actually discussing AI? We think of it as being objective, perfectly objective in some ways, but it's really not. It really depends on who's doing the programming a lot of times, to the views and the extent of power that the AI has. Is that correct?
So I think to your first point on the question of should we be thinking about what's next and what's happening behind closed doors at these companies, absolutely. If we've learned anything from what has happened with social media and the broader debate around privacy in this country, it's that policymakers and the general public are often several steps behind these companies. And so certainly, this kind of broader push in Congress to do things differently this time when it comes to AI and be more forward looking is really a result of a realization that, hey, we need to look ahead and think about what might come next so that we don't have a situation where companies have unfettered power and no guardrails or rules regulating what they're doing. On your question of the bias in AI and how these systems can replicate the, opinions or mindset of their creators, it's certainly an issue that is being looked at right now. Is there too much power concentrated just among a handful of companies that are controlling these models? And there's a lot of debate about how you could use competition policy to address that. And the other broader problem is that these systems have the ability to reinforce some of the existing biases and stereotypes in our world because they're trained with data that's scraped from the internet, and that data is imperfect and holds, you know, existing biases in areas like housing, employment, etc. And so there's a real concern in Washington right now that as these systems become more widely available and are used to make more and more important decisions, that they could replicate some of those problems moving forward and perhaps amplify them.
Technology policy reporter for the Washington Post, Kat Zakshefsky, is our guest here today on the One Update. Last question for you, Kat. There is so much hand-wringing and consternation in, as I said before, the creative fields that, and you mentioned a moment ago that AI mostly scrapes the internet for what it uses to learn from, as its source material to learn from. We've heard a lot of concern that AI is stealing artists' style and replicating that. Is that a valid concern? How is that going to be worked out legally? Is that something that's going to have to work through the court system? And how could someone even in theory prove that an AI used their art to sort of train it in its style? This seems very legally complicated.
Extremely legally complicated. There's broad concerns of, standard art, like you mentioned, in the hearing earlier this week. We also heard some concerns about the music industry, as we've heard, some of these models that are trained on music of artists like Drake then come out with a song that sounds like Drake. I mean, what legal right does Drake have to that music? These are really thorny questions that I don't think have been tested yet in the U.S. court system. And you're going to be trying to apply copyright laws that were developed decades before, many of these models were even imagined to these questions. And so that's going to be certainly an issue that we see play out in the courts. We also see Congress already trying to grapple with this issue. They're hearing from their constituents, artists, musicians who are concerned about this and having hearings on that matter. And do we need new copyright laws to specifically address these questions? This is something that will be likely a defining court battle of the next years, if not decades to come.
Kat Zakshefsky, technology reporter for The Washington Post, has been our guest here on The One Update. Kat, thank you so much for your time and making time in your busy schedule for us.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. These questions are so important as we try to understand where AI is going and what our policymakers are going to do about that. And I really appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, thank you so much, Kat. It's Culture Shift, The One Update here on the show. All right, Nate, what are you playing this week?
Oh, man, I have not had a whole lot of time to play video games this week on top of doing research about AI, something I really don't know that much about, but had a lot of questions about. I've also been working on a super secret project for WDET, so I don't want to. Yeah, I can't say anything. But my time has been eaten up by those things.
The more conversations that I'm listening to and reading and having about AI, the more I'm just like, no screens. I'm going in the woods right now.
Yeah.
I don't want to look at anything. I don't want to think about it.
Yeah.
I'm a big picture thinker, and I'm just like, wow, I'm horrified.
and I know that rogue AI has been a great subject for horror movies in the past, but it just seems really like ripe territory right now, doesn't it?
We're getting there. All right, thank you so much, Nate. You can catch Nate. He's got a daily gaming news podcast called Let's Play wherever you get your podcasts. You can catch him every Thursday here on Culture Shift on 101.9 WDET.